Hey, let's have an AA meeting. Y'all ready? All right. My name is Jay Parker, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the Nava Club. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story.
This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately indeed, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, and one of them too, I must have this thing. I've met Billy one time, and he made such a remarkable impression on me that day. It was up in Gainesville at a little meeting, and I think he shared the 3 minutes that's customary, and boy, did he put a lot into it. At least I got a lot out of it. And so I immediately asked him if he would consider telling his story. Now, he's from New Jersey, and he had to schedule it. And so I guess that was 4 or 5 months ago. But here he is. He's a man of his word. Billy N. from Neptune, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't really travel that far. I also have a house in Beaufort, Georgia. I'm kind of a 70-30 resident working on becoming 100% resident of Georgia. My sobriety date's January the 5th of 1990. My home group right now is a Design for Living Big Book study on the Jersey Shore. And I attend a bunch of meetings up north here around Beaufort, Lawrenceville. I do like that meeting in Gainesville on Sunday mornings. There's a lot of time there. I remember that 3 minutes, though, because it was something that I am an expert on, which means it's probably not good for you. There was a young kid in the room sharing about being cool. And unfortunately, I know all about being too cool to get sober. Because cool people do not get sober. I came to AA at 15 years old from a judge in New York, a juvenile court judge. I did not get sober at 15. I got sober at 23. And at 23, my home group was the Inside Freedom Group in a maximum custody correctional facility in New York State. So you can see between ages 15 and 23, I made a lot of forward social progress. I never was able to put time together. I was in and out of AA all the time. But the reason I remember that 3 minutes is because when I was about 18 years old, a guy pulled me outside a meeting in New York, and he looked right at me, and he said, Billy, you're a pretty nice kid, but unfortunately, you might be too cool to get sober, and that's a shame. And at 18 years old, I really didn't know what too cool to get sober was. I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know what it felt like. Today, if I'm uncomfortable in a meeting, there's a pretty good chance that I'm looking at some young guy who is too cool to be sober. Because when you've been too cool to be sober, you're very aware of all the traits that come along with that. You're on time for nothing. You're respectful of nobody or nothing. When you do come in late to a meeting, you're never quiet and just sit in a chair. I need to fist bump, shake hands, whatever. So that's where we met, and there was a young kid sharing about that. So I'll tell you in a general way, like the book says, I'll try to stay away from opinions and give experience. I really only have two. Sometimes I will admit today I'm 48 years old. I'm 24 years sober, so it's very easy for me to think I am a first-time winner, but I'm not. I came to my first AA meeting at 15 years old. I was not dressed like this. I came to that meeting in a pair of black engineer boots, dungarees, some kind of heavy metal concert T-shirt, a Levi dungaree jacket with an Ozzy Oil painting on the back, and a pack of Marlboro Red slid down the front of my pants. That's how I faced life every day. That's how I went to school. And the only thing I liked about AA at that time was it was a smoker's paradise, even for a 15-year-old kid. You know, it was the first place I had been ever where I didn't get suspended or detention or grounded. And I never felt judged in AA, even at 15 years old. I felt like I was welcomed. The problem that I had, and I'll tell you a little of my story, is that I hear a lot of times people say, they tell their story and they say, I'm going to tell you what it was like, I'm going to tell you how I got here, and I'm going to tell you how it is today. And at 15 and 16 and 17 years old, I would hear those stories and I would admit that their bottoms were bad. But I would think there was about 10 minutes of the middle part of their story that they were trying to rob from me. That they were trying to sentence me to a life filled with boredom. And I had a lot of grand plans, you know. I had not been to an outdoor heavy metal concert yet. I had not been to a Red Sox-Yankees game without my dad yet. I had not been to an Islanders-Ranger game. I had not done all this stuff I wanted to do. And I thought these people in AA were just trying to take this away from me. You know, and then I told you my home group is a big book study. I don't consider myself some kind of hardcore big book thumper. I consider myself somebody who loves the program of action that's laid out in the big book. I consider myself somebody who believes that the way we get sober in AA is through that big book, but that we don't preach. We don't have special people who talk about the steps. We don't have quote-unquote self-anointed people who are better than other people. We have members. And in my experience, the way a member gets sober is through the big book. But, you know, I sponsor a lot of young guys up north. Most of them are too cool to get sober. Most of them are very young with bad attitudes. I often think, thank God, texting and Facebook didn't exist when I got sober. But I sponsor all these young guys. But, you know, when I'm in my backyard and I crack that book open and maybe I have a cigar lit and we start to go through that book, one of the most important things I tell them about going through that book is you'll know what AA is and what AA isn't, and both are important to your life. Because you're going to meet a lot of people in AA who are going to tell you what AA is according to their own opinion. And if you can't find it in the first 164 pages of this book, and if you can't find it in the printed part, not the nice spiritual notes that I write, not my highlights, but just the words that existed when I bought the book, then you should run away from those people. Don't let people tell you how to dress. Don't let them tell you where to work. Don't let them deny your dreams. Find someone who's been through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because my experience is there's a lot of things you can hear in meetings that aren't in the book. I can tell you there's one of them that goes, there's nothing worse than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. That's not my story. I appreciate it's other people's stories. My story is there's nothing worse than a belly full of booze and your mom's head full of Al-Anon. That's my story. I was a chronic teenage alcoholic, always in trouble. When my mom went to Al-Anon, the rules of the house changed. When my mom went to Al-Anon, when I was handcuffed to a chair, I could no longer call my house because it no longer accepted collect phone calls. When my mom went to Al-Anon, some lady told her the house had rules and hours, that it was going to be like a store, and a store opens up at a set time in the morning and it closes at a set time at night. And if your son can't be home by the time it closes, well, then he can sleep outside, he can sleep at a friend's, but we're going to start to have some structure in this house. So Al-Anon interfered with my drinking greatly. There's another one, the one I hate the most, which is that I think sometimes is alarming, is when people say their worst day sober is better than their best day drinking. That is not my story. It is so far from my story, it's not even funny. I think I know where they get it from. There's a page in the big book that says I would not trade the life of today for the life of yesteryear. That's not even a question. But don't ask me to compare Spring Break Fort Lauderdale 1986 with checking into a maximum custody correctional facility at 4 months, 5 months sober. Like, I know which of those 2 days was better. I'm very clear, you know? And I'm not a stay-at-home, smoke-a-bunch-of-pot, watch-Pink-Floyd-the-wall till 5 o'clock in the morning kind of alcoholic. I know there are those types of alcoholics. That's not me. I'm the alcoholic where there's always something better going on wherever I'm not. And that has led to a lot of trouble in my life. Because even long before texting, long before cell phones, whatever bar I was in, whatever party I was at, there was something else going on someplace better. And I needed to be there. And so I think about some things that people hear those things in meetings, and they think, boy, that's not my story. Especially because I know my story, and I know the type of people that I sponsor. And I know who I don't sponsor. I've never had a guy come up to me, and let me just say clearly, I only sponsor women. I believe clearly that men with the men, women with the women. I know there are exceptions sometimes, but if you're a young guy getting sober like I was most of my life, there's no exception for me to be sponsoring a young woman. That's just the rule that was passed on to me. But, you know, when I sit down with a new guy, I can tell you who I don't meet. I've never had one person say to me, you know, I started going to the gym 6 months ago. 3 months ago, I decided to go to a little bit of yoga. Last month, I got into therapy, and I just thought that I needed this AA thing for this life change I'm going through. I've never met a person like that in AA. I meet people who have burnt down every bridge, destroyed every relationship, have nowhere else to go. And my experience in AA is if you have somewhere else to go, you might not be ready to be here. That's just my personal experience. You know, I was raised, I always say, I'm an alcoholic because of what it says in the doctor's opinion and more about alcoholism. It describes me to a T. I've tried every possible way to drink, and it's never worked. The doctor's opinion spells out my type of alcoholic perfectly, and it also makes very clear that I drink for the effect. Except I used to think I was drinking to get drunk. It took me a long time to learn that I was drinking not to be sober. That my whole problem, my entire life, is that I'm not comfortable in my own skin sober. I couldn't figure that out at 15 years old. I couldn't figure that out at 20. I don't even think I figured it out inside that first home group, in the Inside Freedom group. I think I figured that out about 3 years later when I went to my first Joe and Charlie Big Book study. And I heard them dissect the doctor's opinion, and I heard them dissect more about alcoholism. Because I come from a crazy family, and that doesn't mean that you're an alcoholic. It doesn't help. It comes with a whole lot of other problems. You know, I'm obviously Irish Catholic. My dad was an undercover narcotics cop. He wound up running the DEA task force where I grew up. That was not always good for me. My mom was most of my life an untreated Al-Anon, an untreated codependent. Her job was to keep whatever insanity was going on in that house together. If you grew up in that house, we don't believe in alcoholism. That's number one. We also don't believe that all drinking is drinking. I mean, just having a beer in your hand is not drinking in my family's crazy culture. Drinking means that you're going on a mission. Drinking means that you're going on a mission, you don't know where it's going to end. Drinking means that all bets are off once you light the fuse. That's drinking where I come from. I don't know anything about the line. I hear people talk about it. I respect their spiritual truth, that they crossed the line. I've never seen the line. I have no idea where that line is. I know that I have been an out of control, get hammered, violent, antisocial, disrespectful alcoholic since the minute I started drinking. Now, I don't count splitting a beer with my dad at a Yankee game. When I talk about drinking, I'm talking about being 12 years old. I'm talking about hanging out with a bunch of older guys, going in the woods, getting my first 8-pack of Miller small bottles, my second 8-pack of Miller small bottles. And people talk about progression in Alcoholics Anonymous. To me, a little bit of a dangerous word, because I know that I was as alcoholic when I went to my first AA meeting at age 15 as I was when I came in on January the 5th of 1990. Now, if progression meant that by the time I was in ninth grade on a Monday morning, all I thought about is, where are we drinking on Friday night? Who has fake ID? Who has extra money to get beers? By the time I was in 10th grade, all I thought about on a Monday morning was, I can't make it to Friday night. Like all these other kids, they can go to school all week and they can just drink on the weekends. Like, I'm only in 10th grade and I already know I have to come up with some excuse, some lie, some reason that I need to get drunk Wednesday or Thursday. And by the time I was in 12th grade, I really went to school on a Monday morning. It's funny, today I was kind of interviewing, but I was talking to a guy and I was explaining my resume. Now, I could do a whole, like, workshop, 3-day workshop, on building your life back when you're a complete disaster. because there's things you have to explain. There's things I have to explain. All the people I went all the people that I work with now did things I find impossible. They graduated high school when they were supposed to. They went to 4 years of college in a row. They've never missed a student loan payment. They've done all these things that I just never got the handbook for. So how do you explain to somebody? Somebody today was talking to me, and I had to say, well, I'm one of those kids who got over a 1,200 on the SATs but had to go to summer school. Like, how does that make sense to the average human being who's an earthling? They don't know what to do with that information. Or how do I explain that I have 6 undergraduate colleges that I have credits from before I finally went to one college and finished and then went and got my master's but did it later in life? Like, I've had to learn from other men in Alcoholics Anonymous how to become a productive member of society, and it's not always been easy. You know, I remember I looked right at a guy when I was 25 years old, and I said to him in a diner in Manhattan, I'm going to be 40 years old by the time I finish school. And he was an old-timer, and he looked right at me, and he said, well, then you can be 40, finish with school, or not finish with school. I mean, he was giving me no wiggle room. But, you know, as a teenager drinking, you know, I can just, and again, I heard what he said about, you know, people's stories. I try not to disrespect the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. My language is atrocious on a daily basis. I don't curse at the podium. I try to respect the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I also know I led a very indecent and disrespectful life. So there are certain things I have to talk about that maybe I don't like to or are hard to talk about. But I prefer to be honest about those things, you know? You know, the guys that I looked up to where I grew up in New York, they basically had 3 things that I liked about them. They chased women, they got drunk, and they avoided work. That seemed like a good plan for me as a teenager. That seemed to be like something that I also was looking up to, looking forward to. I also know that if I were to do my 4th step or 5th step publicly here, which I'm not going to do, I think I did that like 20 years ago, unfortunately, at a podium, and you learn how to share in a general way. But I can open up my inventory a little bit. And that is, if I'm bad at something, you know how I'm bad at it, because once I know I'm bad at it, I don't do it in front of other people anymore. And if I'm good at something, it's easy to know I'm good at it, because once I know I'm good at it, I'll do it in front of other people. And, you know, drinking and fighting became a badge of honor for me. And fighting, I've lost a lot of fights. But I was taught by a dad who said there's no such thing as a fair fight. Don't listen to the other boys' fathers who tell you that, fair fighting. There's no such thing as a fair fight. And just never back down. Don't be the guy who runs away, who gives up. So between drinking and fighting, and then I'll admit my shallowness when it comes to sports, music, and women, you know, I've spent a lot of nights before metal detectors were very popular at heavy metal concerts. They used to be the pat-down line. And there used to be a guy who was very big who patted you down as you went into the garden. And I would never get past that guy. I would always have things that were not allowed in the garden. And then I would hang out in the parking lot with the other people who were not allowed in the garden, which is a good crowd to hang out with if you're looking to have a good time. You just don't get to hear the music. But if you're the alcoholic of my type, I don't care if it's sports, women, music. I don't care how much you like any or all of the above. Alcohol comes first. Always, every day, alcohol's first. And, you know, I started to get in a lot of trouble. It just happened. I mean, I sometimes get a little worried when I hear people preaching to newcomers about, I don't like to disrespect the miracle of staying away from a drink for one day. I don't like to be the judge, jury, and executioner and almost make myself like perhaps I can schedule someone else's spiritual experience when I know that's God's job. Like, I don't need to tell someone with one day that it's more than just not drinking. Because that's just ridiculous. And that's just a death sentence to certain people. For a guy like me, one day without a drink is an absolute miracle. Do I believe in the big book? Do I believe in rigorously going through the steps? Yes. Do I believe in service? Yes. And I consider myself a three-sided triangle AA member. But I do not want to ever forget how rough it is to get one day sober. Because here's what I know. I hear this term thrown out a lot, untreated alcoholism, which I find fascinating. Because I hear a lot of so-called experts, they tell people they're suffering from untreated alcoholism, which maybe they are. But I know this. No one drinking has ever called me and said they want to go through the steps. Ever. I've never had an active drinker call me and say, Billy, you're right. I've decided to go through the book. No, I've had a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous who has crashed and burned like me for a 100th time on some usual defect or shortcoming, who's done everything except the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they say, I think I'm ready. And for some people that takes 3 years, some people that takes 3 days. I mean, because I used to be the militant, dogmatic, hate the rest of AA big book thumper. And I'm just not that guy today. Because I have found that relationship with the God that the big book talks about. I know that God carried me in the palm of his hand with young people's meetings and young people's conventions and sober softball until, you know, I hear people want to debate meeting makers make it. I will not debate that statement, pro or con, because meeting makers make it all to the same place. Either accept the program of recovery or drink. It's a very easy place that meeting makers make it to. For me, I just don't want to be what Bill Wilson called the judge, jury, and executioner of my brother or sister. I want to be the compassionate alcoholic to the newcomer. I want to be the member of AA that realizes how hard your life really is right now. I don't meet anyone who's new in AA who's coming in on a good streak, including myself. I meet people, like I said, whose lives are totally destroyed. And, you know, AA is, I always like to say that if there's anyone here who's new, who doesn't like AA or hates AA and doesn't believe in God, I want to especially welcome you. Because that's not a requirement to come here. If all the people I hung out with who are very active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, if at their first meeting they had a like AA and believe in God, I'd have no friends today. I can't deny someone else their own spiritual journey, because mine has been a long spiritual journey and not always easy. You know, I can tell you that living in a maximum custody correctional facility, sober, the laws of the inside of one of those places is not those 36 spiritual principles on the wall. One might argue that it's the law of the jungle. And so when I hear people tell other people what it's like to be sober inside a correctional facility that have never lived in a correctional facility, I don't mean held overnight, I mean lived. Your permanent address is a correctional facility. Not only am I living in a place that's governed by the laws of the jungle, but it's just as easy for me to get drunk or high in there as it is out on the street. And I am indebted to the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous who brought meetings into the prison that I was in. I will never, ever be able to pay back that debt. Because what happened for me is I'm a bully from a long time ago, but my first sponsor, I tried to defend being a bully, that I'm a bully who picks on other bullies. You know? I'm not a real bully. Real bullies just pick on people that can't defend themselves. I'm the kind of bully who picks on bullies who pick on other people. The twisted, my mind is ridiculously twisted, and I understand that. And it still gets me into trouble. I sometimes want to defend the world. I sometimes want to take it into my own hands to resolve situations. But when I came to AA, I told you, I hated AA, except that I could smoke. And I even went one time, I heard somebody talk about the anniversary meeting last Friday night of the month, and I went to it. and some old lady, like 35 years old, turned the lights down halfway and brought a sheet cake out, and all these people sang happy anniversary to each other. And I remember just thinking to myself, 26, 36, 46, 56, like, even if I make it another 40 years, this is the best my life's going to get. Last Friday night of the month, big anniversary meeting. Like, I had a lot more interesting things to do. And I used to say stupid things like, time doesn't matter. You know, I used to want to, and I used to like to go to the meeting after the meeting, and I like to make fun of people. So I point at the active people in AA, the people who have sponsors, the people whose whole pathetic life is 12-step recovery, the people who have service commitments. I like to pick on anyone that blends in and concedes to the social norm. I like to pick on those people. So I did all my teenage years. And, you know, I recently went to another high school reunion. And it's interesting. There's two predictions in my high school yearbook about me. There's a section where people could fill out, I predict in 20 years. And one said St. John's Hospital will name a hospital after Billy N. And the other said Billy N. will tear every bone and ligament in his body. Because I'm a blackout drinker from word go. I'm really not a puker. I'm a go out all night until the morning, until I pass out kind of drinker. I have a problem, though, because by 3 o'clock in the morning, I've probably lost control of just about every muscle in my body except for my mouth, which seems to work better at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's a bad situation when you drink like I do, when you're at an Irish bar at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're running your mouth and you can't defend yourself. Because I stand here today, and the truth is, I have no left kidney. I lost and ruptured that. I have no spleen. I lost and ruptured that. Sutures, broken bones, so many broken ribs because I can't shut my mouth when I'm laying outside the back door of an Irish bar and some guy is kicking me in the ribs with steel-tipped boots, and I still can't. I still need to get the last word in. I need to keep going. And then, you know, listen, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the kind of people you can meet here. I love the characters in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that there's only certain kind of people you can meet in AA. You know, I travel a lot for work. Here's a person I've never met anywhere except for AA. People who have had their license privileges suspended before they had a license. I've never met a person like that in the regular so-called world. In AA, it's not really that big a deal. You know? I didn't even have a driver's license, but they suspended it. In the rest of the world, people ask you, like, how does that happen? You know, I was on a business trip not too long ago, a couple years ago, with two other guys from work, and we landed in this airport. I'm 20-something years sober, and there was one car left at the Hertz dealer. It was a Shelby Mustang, which I've never driven. But it was a Shelby Mustang. I wasn't driving that night. And the guy I was traveling with, we got on the road, and he didn't get on the highway. So, of course, I can't keep my thoughts to myself. So, like, 10 minutes into this ride, I said, yo, aren't you going to see what this thing can do? Like, you're not interested in it taking on the highway even for a couple of exits? And, you know, I know the book is so right when it says, you know, that we're mentally and physically different from our fellows. Because he said to me, I don't want to get a speeding ticket. Now, I'm not saying it's okay to speed, so I don't want to be on the tape saying that Billy N said it's okay to speed, you know. I have my own challenges with driving, you know. I can't listen to AC/DC and drive the speed limit. I have a whole bunch of issues. But he's right. For him to get a speeding ticket is a big deal. Let me tell you about me. If I were to get pulled over, if I have a license, a registration, and an insurance card that are all valid, where the VIN numbers match the vehicle that I'm in, and when he talks to the dispatcher, although now I know they have computers, because my problem was never what I got pulled over for when I was drinking. My problem was always what this guy on the other side of the radio was going to tell the person who just pulled me over, which was usually that I didn't go to court or I had a warrant out. And I got stuck in this system. You know, I always say if I was going to write a book for alcoholics, it would say, don't take probation if you're still drinking. Like, take the time. Because myself and my sponsees, we do not probate well. Not when we're drinking. If we're really serious about getting sober, we're the best case example that probation officer has. But if we're BSing ourselves and them, we're a disaster. And at 17 years old, no one told me about this thing called a VOP. The big old violation of probation. Somebody should have explained that to me, maybe a little better. I didn't understand that when I went in front of the judge, he really didn't care what I just did. What he was really mad about was I broke my promise from 5 months ago that I would stay out of trouble. But when you're the alcoholic of my type, what I've learned about myself is that I cannot make promises I can live up to when I'm drinking. I want to, I think. I tell you I'm going to. But one single drink is like setting off a nuclear explosion in me. And it took me a long time to wrap my arms around that the first drink gets you drunk. Sometimes I think we spend so much time about telling people to write the perfect fourth step in the perfect leather-bound journal with the perfect rule of columns, and we skip over the first step. Because I believe what one of my mentors taught me is that the results you get from steps 2 to 12 will be in direct proportion to your surrender in step 1. That you need to surrender. Not give up. You need to surrender. And without surrender, it doesn't matter how perfect the fourth step you do. You need to surrender. And if you have an alcoholic ego, which most of us do, including myself, it's hard to believe that I can live out just about any dream in the world except for having one drink. Like, I can do almost anything. But I can't have one drink. One single drink wipes everything away. I thought it was the first shot after the eighth tall boy that got me drunk. In fact, that's another thing. I've only met people in AA who've gone to DWI school who never had a driver's license in AA. You know, at DWI school in New York, I met all these people. They didn't even have driver's licenses yet. But, you know, just so I can tell you a little bit, is that I love to drink, and I'm not afraid to say it. I'm not afraid to say that I think I was a good drinker, whatever that means where I come from. But I had to find a way to identify with the stories in the Big Book and with the program of action. You know, I wasn't a well-heeled New England war veteran stockbroker who arrived on Wall Street. I appreciate that in Bill's story, but I needed to find it for myself. Where did I arrive? Not on Wall Street. Not as a stockbroker. Definitely not as a returning war hero. But I found out where I arrived by working with a sponsor. It's pathetic. I arrived, bars in New York were open at 4 a.m. I arrived in a place called the Tipperary Inn when all of a sudden I became one of the lucky crowd who at 4 in the morning does not get asked to leave but is allowed to stay and drink at the bar until the bartender's done cleaning up. That was my arrival in life. That's when I thought I made it. I wanted to be just like those other guys who got to stay in the bar. You know, I have the typical story of any teenage alcoholic, meaning I never got to celebrate my 21st birthday because I was always drinking in bars long before my 21st birthday, so I could never tell the bartender who's been serving me that it's my 21st birthday. I would always have to say it's my 22nd or my 23rd. But I was in and out of AA for 8 painful years. Arrest after arrest. I killed someone drinking and driving when I was 23 years old. That does not make me an alcoholic. I throw it. I only say it because I know sometimes that there are people. I say it for two reasons. One, everyone deserves the right to get sober no matter what you've done. And it's possible to get a relationship with a higher power no matter what you've done. I say it for that reason. I also say it because I don't want anyone to tell someone else that AA is sanctuary. Somehow if you come to AA, you don't have a debt to pay back to society. I had a debt to pay back to society because that's what society asked of me. And I had to realize that that car accident does not make me an alcoholic. I also like to say it because sometimes I hear people say things like, by God's grace, I never killed someone drinking and driving, which would almost imply that God decided to kill the person who was killed in my accident, which I do not believe for a second. I believe that the God and higher power I believe in does give human beings self-will. I took my self-will back. As a result, catastrophic things happened. I also talk about it because I believe the big book. Sometimes I hear people say, well, I hear people tell bipolar people not to take medicine. I don't know where that is in the book. I think AA has a pretty clear belief about not being doctors and that it's we appreciate outside help. I'm not saying everyone should be on medicine. I'm just saying as a sponsor, it's my job to tell my sponsees to have a regular doctor and have a life plan. I also hear people say things like they're at the podium. I don't know how many times you've heard this story. I've heard it millions. When they say, and I was standing in front of the judge, and like out of nowhere, an angel came down and whispered in the judge's ear, and I didn't go to jail. I have the opposite story. Hopefully an angel came down and whispered in that judge's ear, this guy needs to go to jail. This guy has been lying to you for 7 years. This guy has been promising he's going to stay out of trouble forever. The best thing that happened to me was the judge had had enough of me and decided to send me away. I did my fourth step in a correctional facility. And it didn't look as good as the one I did after Joe and Charlie. But I can tell you this, it's probably the most important day's work I've ever done to date. It's the first time in my life that I could remember that I was willing to even admit for a second that I was responsible for some of my own trouble. I mean, now I joke around about it. That last column, my part in it, which I always call, sounded like a good idea at the time, because it did. If you look at my fourth step, even the last one I did last year, you will see that last column. Every single one of those things I thought was a good idea. Every one of them. But I'm grateful for the men and women who brought meetings into the correctional facility I was in. I told you I met Joe and Charlie, and as I close up here, I said I wanted to be honest about who came here. I came here a racist, an anti-Semite, homophobic. I came here hating everyone else. I just like to be honest about that. Because I like to be honest that it was a black man, and this is the early 90s when the Malcolm X movie came out, with a black Malcolm X baseball hat named Winston, who was my first sponsor when I got out of a correctional facility. And we used to walk down Broadway, and I'd have my Notre Dame Fighting Irish hat on, and he'd have his Malcolm X hat on. And the truth is, he taught me that basically everything that I was raised to believe make you a man, make you not a man. And everything I was raised to believe that make you not a man, make you a man. And I wound up having a night job, and I've been homeless, lived in a welfare hotel, and I wound up having a night job, and I was going to Midnight Madness, which, wherever in New York City, a lot of the very well-heeled people in AA like to make fun of it, because it's crazy. It's out of control. But it's every night at midnight and at 2 a.m. on the weekends. And it's like a MASH unit for people dying of alcoholism. And the people who show up there are broken more than you could even imagine. But they get better there. For me, my problem was there was a lot of gay men and women there. And I was such a hater that I wouldn't even eat dinner with them in a diner. Like, I just got to be as completely honest about that as I can be. Because I wasn't going to be seen at a table with them. And it's interesting because, 3 years later, some of my best friends in the world. You know, in AA and other 12-step programs were a different place in the early 1990s. People say, is it different today? Not really. But I'll tell you what was different. in a lot of 12-step programs, including AA, there was a disease going around in the early 1990s where there was no medicine for. And people were dying in our meetings in New York City every week. And even though I didn't like these people, they would buy me a hamburger when I had no money. They would buy me a chocolate shake. They would give me $10 to go to a Joe and Charlie Big Book workshop. You know, and it was Joe and Charlie at that workshop that taught me to take that my Big Book and the section to the wives, to cross out wives and write mother, and to read through that whole chapter, and every place it referenced a wife to write mother, and every place it referenced a husband to write son, and to read that for a week straight. And it really got through this Irish thick skull exactly the kind of torture that I had put people through. Now, I don't believe in God today. I think I say I depend on Him. But I didn't believe in God because of a fourth step or amends or the book or anything else. I believe in God because I've witnessed miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous that are not explainable. That's why I believe in God. And I'll end with just saying what happened to me. I went to the International Convention in San Diego in 1995, like the one that's going to be here in a couple of weeks, in a couple of months. And that convention changed my life. And not because I sat next to 50,000 people saying the Lord's Prayer. I'm way too cold and unemotional for that to bounce through, you know? What happened was I was online to go into the jail meeting. And there was a guy next to me. And he had just gotten out of prison in Oklahoma. And he was 11 years sober. And he told me that his probation officer wouldn't let him come to this conference in San Diego. And he told, and there was a bombing in Oklahoma a couple of months before that conference. And he said that every week he got into a fight with his parole officer because he begged if he could go. And finally his parole officer cursed him out and threw him out and said, only two people can get you there, God or the governor. And I'll never forget, he pulled out a piece of paper and he unfolded it. And it was a raised seal of the governor of Oklahoma. And it was a letter that said, to it may concern, with his parolee number and his inmate number and his address. And it said, to whom it may concern, please allow so-and-so to attend the San Diego Convention of the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me his home group members had written the governor's office. And he got this package 2 days before. And that nagged at my head, like, here I did not want to believe in God, or maybe I was afraid there really was one. And just when I thought that I was done with God, that I didn't even believe in, 5 days later, I went to the Wednesday night meeting in Manhattan, and there was an elderly lady sitting at the front of the podium. Of course, I'm judgmental, so when I judge the messenger, I don't hear the message. And I wondered, how could I have anything to do or in common with this lady? And she was an 80-year-old woman from Israel who had a tattoo of a number on her right forearm of the camp she was in Europe as a kid. And she told the audience she carried the flag for Israel the week before in San Diego at the opening ceremony. And she talked about being online in the back of Jack Murphy Stadium in alphabetical order and laying down the flags with the men from Iran and Iraq and Jordan. And I remember thinking to myself, like, how is all of this possible? You know, if you go to my house today in New Jersey, my first floor is very AA safe. People I work with, neighbors, can come into my house and you would not know I'm in AA. There might be one circle and triangle magnet on the refrigerator. But other than that, it's pretty safe. But there's one book on my coffee table, which is called The 80 Days That Changed the World. Because in 1997, Time magazine asked the greatest historians in the world, not AA historians, the greatest historians, look between January the 1st, 1900 and up till today. We need to know the 80 most important days. And when you go 13 days in that book, you land on Mother's Day, 1935. And it says, a broken stockbroker from New York met a broker and surgeon from Akron, and on this day formed the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, which millions of people's lives have been changed. And from that, other fellowships have been created with more millions. And you want to go a couple of pages before or after, and you see what they're comparing that with? The wall coming down? Jackie Robinson playing baseball, women voting, D-Day, the I Had a Dream speech. That's what the smartest people in the world made the start of AA equal with. And so I'm not sure if I've ever, like, treated AA well enough to be one of the 80 most important days. And so I just want to talk about service for a little bit. I think it's important. I don't think it's my job to tell anyone else what kind of service people should do. I believe in the old saying that the only crime in AA is not finding out what you're good at. That everybody here has a gift. Some people can drive newcomers to meetings, and in that 15 minutes, they can work miracles in the front seat of a car. Some people are great long-term, emotionally warm and loving sponsors. And there are other people who are like train wreck specialists. They're not good long-term, but they can talk an alcoholic off the ledge like nobody else. And they bandage him up and make him look pretty, and they pass him off to one of those long-term people. You know, my experience, you know, I put my hand up in the air to be the security chairperson of a young people's conference in 1993. That's all I did. And then I became the alternate GSR of the crazy West Side Young People's Group. And then I became the GSR of the West Side Young People's Group. And then I became a DCM. And then I was the chair of the Corrections Committee. In 1999, I was actually the area delegate for Illinois. I lived in Chicago for work. And today, I mean, I have 2 years left. I have a brand new motorcycle. I can't wait to be done. I don't know what my next assignment will be, and hopefully it'll be coffee and maybe, I don't know, taking meetings into a prison in Georgia somewhere. But currently, I'm one of the 14 Class B trustees, alcoholic trustees at GSO, and I'm the chairman of the board of directors of the Alcoholics Anonymous World Services Board. Now, I don't know how that happened. How do you come here not finished with college, not finished with anything, hating everybody? My brother, as straight as I am, he is gay, and by the time he told the family, AA had changed me. My job was not to be his critic. My job was to be his brother. Like AA taught me, my job is not to be the critic or the judge, jury, executioner of my fellow brother or sister alcoholic. My job is to reach a handout and let them know that they're safe in this room. Because the newcomer, above all, deserves to feel safe, male or female. They deserve to know they can come in here, they can recover from what seems like a hopeless, hopeless state of mind and body, and that they can meet someone and maybe get a sponsor and get a network and get a home group and get active and get a life that's beyond our wildest dreams. I hate that corny statement, but for me, it's true. My life is beyond my dreams today. And not because it's that great, but for a guy like me, it's ridiculous how great it is. I sometimes joke around when I travel for work, because there was a time in my life sober, when I got out of prison, that I used to go into hotels in Times Square. I used to walk upstairs to the room, to the floors that people stayed on, because I only had enough money that day for a pack of Newports, that I would go upstairs and look for somebody's room service cart. And maybe they didn't finish their hamburger, or maybe they didn't finish their french fries, or maybe they didn't finish their pizza. I don't like to admit from a podium that I've eaten food that other people already ate, but that's where this disease took me. And that's where it'll take anybody. The one thing I've learned in AA is every bottom has a bottom. I don't care what your bottom is. There's another worse one out there. So if you're new, I really want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you hated everything I say, great. You don't have to like what I said. But don't give up on AA because of one person or one group. Search out the AA that works for you. There is nothing wrong with that. Thanks.
Billy, I want to thank you for telling your story. It was a good one. I was identifying with a don't take probation, you know. I always figured, you know, I'm already in jail. I'm coming back anyhow. I'll just take the time now and cut down on my trips through booking, you know. So that was good.
driving high, a big piece of the pie. So many they got it wrong. As for me, when I wanted too much, ain't never enough. Hide it from everyone else. Save it for a rainy day. If you wanna have it all the time, gotta give it away. All I had me love, kept it on. Sleep, it'll never leave if I give it.